Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
The Chaser Report is recorded on Gadigal Land.
Striving for mediocrity in a world of excellence, this is The Chaser Report.
Hello and welcome to The Chaser Report. Dom Knight, Charles Firth and Gabby Bolt with Sean McAuliffe. Sean, welcome.
Thank you. It's the first time I've been here.
I'm so sorry that your career is now at a point where you've got to do podcasts. So my deepest sympathies.
Happy to do it, but I've done them before. I've done at least three podcasts.
Oh my, where is fourth podcast? That's incredibly exciting.
Fourth time's a charm.
Yeah. That's the saying.
That's right. Now, actually, I was interested, Dom, you and I have met many times.
Yes.
Probably on John Fain's show.
John Fain's show, possibly the only time we've met before, but no, look, that was a great... That was a couple of times, actually, we did the Fain show. That was a good show.
We're old friends.
Old friends.
And Gabby and I have worked on... she was a writer for Mantis Hell.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We met by email.
We did. We met exclusively over email and one phone call.
And Charles, I met once in my life, and that was 25 years ago, when he fucking stole our Logie.
Oh, what?
We were up... Newstopia was up for a Logie.
Yes.
You might remember this.
Yes.
And we were removed from the list, apparently, because we'd... somebody in our cast had decided to do a television show on Channel 10 called Talking About Your Generation. They pulled it, leaving only Firth's special American documentary.
Mr. Firth goes to Washington.
So he won our Logie.
No, hang on. He didn't win the Logie.
No, he just got it.
He just took it by default.
Yeah, I just got it. Yeah.
Do you have a Logie?
We got several.
The
Logies.
Chaser won two Logies. Yeah. Charles, Mr. Firth won to Washington. Was lucky to be there.
It wasn't really winning a Logie. It was more sort of not winning a Logie.
Yeah.
He didn't lose.
Yeah.
He hadn't committed some crime for SBS.
Yeah.
Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you. Well done.
That's nice.
Actually, we did meet several years later at the Wayside Chapel.
Yes, we did too.
Yes. And
we were praying together.
We were praying together.
Yeah, I believe that.
I remember you at the time... we're talking very enthusiastically about this new show that you're about to put to air.
Which one?
It was called The Former PM or something.
The ex-PM.
That's a better name, The Former PM.
And I didn't quite realise that you'd already sort of done it.
Is this one of the things where you gave him advice?
I thought you were riffing. No. I thought you were riffing an idea and I was going, that's a terrible idea. And then you were going, and you were really... You were very polite, but I could see that you were very irritated because then
as it turned out, you were right. Let's be honest here. You're right. And we did, in the way of the ABC, out of sheer bloody mindedness, they give us a second season. And had I had the conversation with you, I'm sure your advice would have been the same.
Exactly.
I did see though, Sean, that the final ever Mad as Hell, you began by teasing the idea of entering politics. So I like the notion that your next step is going to be actually becoming an ex-PM. Is that on the agenda at this point?
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? I think that sort of level of irony appeals to me, that sort of postmodern approach. I would like to end my career. I feel it's coming soon. To tie it up in a little postmodern bow like that, it'd be lovely.
Would you do the whole Zelensky thing and... attack a foreign nation and take them to war.
An interesting read on history, Charles.
we've got some Russians on the team, keep me informed about how it all works.
Yeah,
Alexa.
Pro-Russians at least.
Yeah. The thing that Zelensky didn't have that I have hanging over my head is, of course, I played a character called Milo Kerrigan in Full Frontal. Now, I think if Zelensky had actually done that, if Vladimir had done that, he wouldn't be president today. Yeah. So I suspect that if I was to ever enter into the orbit of politics...
There'd be lots of attack ads.
I reckon all they need to do is just play a few YouTube clips. Yeah. It's me done.
Bring out the archive. Now, your new book is Tripping Over Myself, your autobiography. The first sentence is, I'm not sure this book is such a good idea.
Yeah. So that's the hard sell.
What's the read at this point?
Yes. That's the hard sell. I'm not even convinced it is now, even though it's printed and Charles is looking through it.
Yeah. You know, we received a copy yesterday afternoon.
Oh, good. Well, that prevents you from reading it.
So I've read the first 50 pages or so.
All right.
You're not only not yet working on TV, you're not only... you're not at uni at that point. Is there a pacing issue in the book, Sean, do you think?
There's 400 pages. I know. It breaks into a bit of a sweat around about page 110. I think I certainly jump over my legal career, if that's any consolation. You don't have to sit through 10 years of me being a solicitor running files for the State Government Insurance Commission. Fascinating though that might be, I have left that out. most people do three volumes. I mean, Stephen Fry, I think, has done three so far. Mm. Kevin Rudd's done four. Yeah.
Jesus had two. I mean, well, you know,
two,
you know. Well, actually, there's lots of books, but you know, like I'm thinking Old Testament, New Testament.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, it depends where you're looking
at
it. Probably the Mormons. Yeah, the Mormon. You have a third book.
Yeah, the unadulterated sequel.
Yeah. So I did leave a bit out. So it does get a bit of a clip on if you can get over the first 50 pages.
I'm really disappointed you don't have an indexing.
No, well, you know why?
Oh, why?
Well, the very reason you would have picked up the book, Charles, would be to see whether you were mentioned in there. And not finding your name, you wouldn't have purchased it. People like you, I'm talking about, not you specifically.
It was because I only was given half an hour to read the entire book and I wanted to see. But flipping through it.
Yes.
Basically, you seem to have met every single famous person in Australia. This is just the biggest name-dropping exercise.
It's an autobiography. What I understood that was what you were supposed to do.
Oh, when I was working with Andrew Denton.
I mean, you could say that. You could say that's nothing.
It's not a big claim these days.
I got lots of far more impressive people than
Gary Sweet.
Gary Sweet's in there.
Yeah. Eric Clapton.
Yeah, he's he and I share. See, if you go to Adelaide, do one of your shows, you know, and you're in the festival centre and you walk along the precinct, around the precincts in the festival centre, you will see stars of fame. And I looking out over the River Torrens, you'll see Eric Clapton's star, Gary Sweet's star, and betwixt them is mine.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That's like Destiny's Child. I love it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Eric and Gary, and to a lesser extent Gary, are impressed when they walk around.
One of the best-known people ever to permanently abandon Adelaide.
I think – no, I had done a show in the precinct in one of the theatres once.
Oh, okay.
And that's the justification for getting it. Yeah.
The qualification.
Yeah. I mean, Eric and Gary, I'm sure, did far more work and stellar work than I did. But I appeared in a charity performance of Relative Values by Noel Coward. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Oh, wow.
I played Peter Ingleton, the insouciant it's got an old coward character. I think I did a good job, and we raised about $15,000 for some charity.
Nice.
And on the basis of that, I was rewarded with a star.
That's great.
And then could I just ask one more star question, which is you've got a photo of you with Barry Humphries.
Yeah, and it's a ruin though, isn't it? It's ruined, that picture.
Yeah, because it's got, what's his name in the middle?
Oh, so we can't even think of who it is, can we?
What's his name?
Are you reading the name down here?
No, I don't. No, Jamie Dury, by the way.
The levels of
Jamie
preparation interview are just staggering.
But do you, like, is there stories about, like, I haven't read the book, obviously. But
no, I
will. Fucking hell.
When did you meet Barry Humphries?
Well, yes, I do tell the story beautifully in the book. Let me give you a truncated, boring version of it. Yes, rendering of it. He was the first guest on my short-lived but brilliant Tonight Show.
On Channel 9.
On Channel 9, yes. Called McAuliffe Tonight. I don't know whether you saw that. Gabby, you'd be too young probably to have seen
it. We all watched it.
That was the greatest television history. Yeah.
Well, Barry was the first guest. I think that was the main reason I did the show was I thought, I get to talk to Barry. Never met him. I quite like him.
Yes.
So rather than sort of send him a fan letter or bump into him and get his autograph or something, I thought, I'd do a Tonight
TV
Show.
Yeah.
Whole show.
Pretend he's a guest. Anyway, so I'm fascinated. I thought, great, Barry's going to be on the show. So there's Barry on the show. And I've never interviewed anybody in my life, by the way, at this point. I should give you a little bit of background, which the Channel 9 people I don't think were aware of. I think they kind of watched McAuliffe Tonight through, In the next room and thought, oh, look, he's interviewing somebody, not realising, of course, it's all scripted.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to Barry and asked Barry a question. Barry's answering. I say, oh, great, Barry's answering. Barry's talking to me on camera. This is fantastic. And I kind of drifted off slightly because I was thinking, oh, what do we have to do after the next break? We're doing a gag. Yeah, we have to do it. And I realised I just wasn't listening to him and his voice was coming to that sort of cadence where he's asked me a question and I can hear his voice go up and it stops. And I look right at him and I thought, I have no idea what you're saying. This is live television. Gabby, this is going out live. So I just went, no, but let me ask you this. And then went on to another topic that I hoped had not been covered in whatever he'd been saying for the previous 2 minutes. I think history shows that I didn't get away with it.
Did he like call you out afterwards?
No. Well, no, he said, he actually said, not to me, but to others, he said he really enjoyed doing the show, but that it wouldn't last.
Oh,
he said, ouch. He said it wouldn't last. Not because it wasn't any... wasn't any good in his mind. He just thought it was a bit too weird.
That's scathing, though, to be like, I loved being there. Yeah. It won't last. No, though,
really. Well, he was quite right. He was quite right.
I do remember, though, the excellent ploy of the very first gag being running through the highlights of the show so far.
Yes, we did. We were inspired a little bit by Daryl Summers, who would often have these sort of backpacking sequences in his shows. Yeah, so we had it... 14 seconds in. I think it was the very first observation made in the opening monologue. Well, the only decent gag in that first one that actually we pulled off quite nicely, we had Danny Minogue on. That wasn't the joke.
Oh, I thought that was the gag.
No, that wasn't the gag. Right. So she's singing Put the Needle on It, I think. I think that was the
song.
Oh,
yeah, that hit.
Which was less memorable than the McAuliffe Tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, we did. We gave her a great bump for her career for selling that album. But in the cutaway during the song, a cutaway to me watching Andrew Denton doing Enough Rope on the ABC, which was concurrently running parallel to our show.
That's so funny.
And as it turns out, most of the audience watching our show thought, oh, that's not a bad idea. So within about 3 or 4 weeks, Andrew was kind of top of the heap.
Oh, my God. What channel was that on again? Channel 9?
Well, we were on Channel 9 and Andrew was on the ABC.
I can't believe Channel 9 even allowed, like, you doing that, or you just
I'm right in thinking that you got the show, because my recollection is that you had several years of being the funniest thing at the Logies by quite a long way, which is a compliment to you and an accurate reflection of the rest of the Logies.
This is sad and
dying. And so they went, we should actually hire this guy because you were the only thing funny on Channel 9 that night.
Know specifically what the mindset was inside the boardroom that thought, yes, this is the next Graham Kennedy. but I do remember we'd done the McAuliffe program on the ABC. That had done reasonably well for an ABC program, and I think that was quite good. I was also in Sea Change. I don't know if you remember, but I was actually an actor for a while.
My mum loved Sea Change.
Well, she wouldn't like the third season.
Oh.
There was me in it. Oh. I was Laura, played by Sigrid Thornton.
Yeah.
She was going out with David Wenham in Series 1. She was going out with William McGuinness in Series 2.
Twists and turns.
And Sean McAuliffe in Series 3.
Oh, congratulations.
The final season.
Yeah, third time's a charm.
Yeah. So I was that was the most popular program in the country at that point. So I think I was riding on the crest of a number of different waves. And they thought that was a good idea. And I hosted the Logies the year before, from memory, I think. Yes. 2001, I think.
Yeah.
Because when we first got to go to it, we'd seen Denton doing it before. We saw you doing it. Somehow we had in our head the notion that the Logies could be done funnily, which was never to be done again. But for a brief period there, it was actually quite... That was our first Logies in 2001.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember you guys coming up to me and saying hello, because I really liked... I liked the first incarnation and the subsequent incarnations of Chaser. It C quadruple N, I think? Was it?
Well, I think it was Election Chaser. Yeah,
2001.
Maybe it was Election Chaser. But I remember contacting your executive producer, who was Mark Fennessy at the time, and just singing your praises, just saying what a wonderful, wonderful show it was. And then we're up against each other, I think, that year for a Logie. That's right. And, I knew people, so I got it.
Yes,
and then, that's right. Then 4 years later, Firth.
Yeah. Came in, knocked you off. Yes.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
The Chaser Report. News you know you can't trust.
Can I just ask, I have spent most of my day knowing that you were coming in. My one anecdote about how funny you are relates to, I think it must have been the third season of the McAuliffe program. You called it the McAuliffe pogrom.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And I just thought the funniest thing, and I still think the funniest thing ever in the history of television is that the, and correct me if I'm wrong because maybe I've misremembered and this is not true, but your set was a large photo of yourself, of you mid-blink.
Yes.
Is that right?
I think so. I don't know whether that was the third season, but certainly for one of the seasons, it may well have been the third, it was a bad picture done in a passport photo booth.
Yes. And it's brilliant, but you cannot find it on the web. Like, there is not a single image of that. You should put it, you should have included it in your book or something.
I should.
Because it's so funny.
Well, how do you know? You haven't read it. It might be in there. Right in there is an Easter egg. That's a good point. But not everything you do needs to be on the internet. Let me just give you that advice.
Well, I think that's, given that other people have uploaded all of the Chaser stuff from the early days, and we're just basically, if anyone ever watches that stuff, our careers such as they are these days will be completely over.
Yes.
But I think that's a healthy thing. I think the internet is a very democratic place, and especially YouTube, you know, and people will curate what they wish. You know, they'll say, well, I think this has value, and you might not think it has value at all, but that doesn't matter because they think it does have value. Mm. So you'll be remembered how they want to remember you. You don't have any say in it at all.
Yes. Okay.
Unless you want to do an autobiography in the vain hope you could change people's minds and hearts.
You'll be remembered as that wanker who wrote an autobiography. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I did like beginning it with the affectation of, you know, being quite self-conscious about the notion of setting it all down, but then a couple of pages in, you're very happy to just tell the story. Well, unselfconsciously.
I'm a comedy nerd. I mean, it's the sort of book that I would have loved to have read when I was 16 or 17 years old, because I was just so drawn to comedy. And I was fascinated by the mechanics of it, and I think I had an instinct for kind of how it worked. And I love marrying those two things together. And I love other people's stories about how they, you know, come to comedy. And I would read those happily, and I figure this hopefully is like that. It's just my version of how I managed to kind of get on into television quite late in the game, because I was about 30 when I decided that I would chuck in the law and become a comedy writer. I wasn't even going to be a performer. I figured that boat had sailed, you know. So I wonder what, you know, it would have been fun. Like, you guys, you know, Gabby, you've been doing it since you were a teenager, probably, comedy. And no?
I've only been doing it for about 2 years.
2 years. But you'd be in your 20s, okay?
Yeah, so
I'm
26.
You're doing it in your 20s. And Charles and Dom, you would have done it in your 20s as well.
Before we finished uni, in my case, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But to know what you wanted to do at that early age, yeah. I find commendable, you know.
Yeah,
it must have been very brave though to take the leap, having built up a career. Or did you just get to the point where you simply couldn't hack it anymore?
I was watching The Late Show. I remember I was watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a couple of episodes before the final one, and I had never watched it. I used to be very kind of weirdly jealous of watching other people's comedy when they were about the same age as me. Mm. Like in the case of the
Late Show. No, that's fair.
Yeah, you see, sort of like DJ were maybe a couple of years younger, and I was going, well, I can't watch them because they're known to be funny, and what if they really are funny? And I'd go down to the Piccadilly Cinemas in Adelaide to see something, and there'd be a big, huge picture of Steve Weisart up there because he had his Tonight Show, and he's a couple of years older than me. And again, I couldn't watch his show either, so I was watching Late Show with someone.
Admittedly, he wasn't known to be funny though.
As it turns out, as it turned out, I think I shouldn't have been that worried. Although his show was far more successful and probably better and funnier than the one I tried.
Well, the genius of him was getting other people to host it all the time. I think that's, if you'd done that with McAuliffe Tonight,
from the first show. No, hadn't even done the first one.
But you had Barry Humphries right there. You could have walked off the set.
I should have, but it would have been a much better interview.
Can I ask, how did you then get into full frontal? Like, because that's a very quick transition from watching The Late Show to suddenly turning up on TV.
To writing for its distant and slightly backward cousin, yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, fortunately, a fellow I'd been to uni with, Gary McCaffrey, who's a very well-known sketch comedy writer. He's really good. He happened to be writing for Fast Forward, so I rang him up and said, can you get me a job? And he said, sure.
Insane.
That's fine. Yeah. So I was working... In those days, you would get, this is for Full Frontal, you would get minutes to air you would be paid for minutes to air, and they would guarantee. They'd say, all right, 30 seconds a show. We'll guarantee you 30 seconds to air. Yeah. So I get paid $120 a week for writing for Full Frontal, whether I got anything on or not.
Yes.
And if I got more than that on, then I would get paid more. If I got less than that, wouldn't matter. It'd still be $120.
I mean, I'm a bit surprised, Sean, the book is so long, given that the story is, yeah, I rang up a mate and got a job.
Well, that's right. Well, no, but after that, I've made many errors. That's why it's called tripping over myself. I've made so many bad shows, I think those are the interesting stories. Those are the things I've learned the most from.
Keen to read in the rest of the book is the amount of time devoted to the many successes versus the ones that didn't go quite so well. Because, I think the ones that didn't go quite so well, they're the most interesting stories.
They are, I agree. And there's more misses than hits in the book.
But that's true of almost everyone who's had a long career in TV. I mean, we kind of had one idea, flogged it as long as we could, and then that was it. Whereas you came up with, you've done, you know, narrative stuff, you've done satire, topical stuff, all different kinds of shows.
Well, the secret to my success, Dom, is that I've never done anything badly enough to not be forgiven. And nor have I done anything good enough to only be remembered by that one great thing. So I've had a middling career where I've been, it's hard to sort of pin me down a little bit. Sometimes I'll do a documentary, sometimes I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I am attracted to doing things that I've never done before, though. In fact, those are the things that...
I mean, panel shows, quiz shows, that kind of... It's all part of the tapestry. We only had one idea.
Mm. Yeah,
foolish.
I think we've all got a skill set that's on. Let's assume it's an A4 piece of paper. Our ability to fold it in as many different interesting shapes as possible, I think, is probably the skill that you need to survive in the Australian television industry, and the ability to make your own work, which is what all comedians should be doing, is make your own work, because no one is going to ask you to do anything.
So, what's the worst project you've ever done?
The worst one, well, probably radio. I did radio, breakfast radio, and I wasn't very good at it. I thought I had to write everything. I wasn't relaxed. I couldn't tell stories about my life. I wasn't. You know what? I thought it was beneath me, and the truth was, it was beyond me. I wasn't able to take advantage of that opportunity.
Was this Vega?
Yes, when it was
that
Vega.
Because I mean, that we've had a bit of a commercial radio experience as well, and the strange thing is they hire you for one particular skill set, and they love hiring kind of wordy ABC comedian types, but then try to make them the exact opposite of that. I mean, we had someone who 3 minutes into any talk break was just started basically aggressively threatening to punch us unless we can't do a point, and they could play, Nickelback or something like that.
Well, we started off, the promise was we were told, okay, it's Radio National with music.
That sounds good.
Do that, okay. Mm. So we did that for about they had a test signal on, and that was rating quite well. We came in, dropped off a little bit, unfortunately, and within a month, they'd gone. I think they should have gone back to the test signal idea. But anyway, within a month, they said, all right, forget about Radio National with music. Let's go 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. This is in 2005, by the way. So I'm there. What about the 2000s? So I was told this with a straight face by the chief programmer, saying, "Oh, there's not been too many good pieces of music made during the 2000s. Apparently, those 15 years were a complete write off. So there was no point playing any CDs from that period. So then we were expected to do personal stories, and I'm not very good at that. I'm not a stand up comedian. I'm not like Denise Scott, who's very good at that sort of thing. So she was able to fold in a lot of her material just as general conversation. Whereas I would take a digi recorder home and go for a walk on the beach and pretend to interview an old fisherman, doing both voices. You know, that was the sort of crap I was handing up, and so they didn't want that, and it was unpleasant. And then I went off and did Newstopia, which was
which was brilliant.
10 past 10 on a Wednesday.
Perfect.
Nearly won a Logie, but I don't want to go into that story again.
Fair enough. Yeah. it is heartbreaking. Yeah.
It is amazing though. Mad as Hell has just gone for so long, 15 seasons long, going back to the start of this government. Is it not a coincidence that it comes to a finish as we have a Labor government?
It's a bit too neat, isn't it? Yeah. No, I think we would have been fine. I think if the appetite had been there. And it was just as ravenous as it was when we started. Because we had a Labor government.
And look, there was plenty to deal with the Rudd-Gillard
government. Absolutely. And, and I suspect, you know, the great thing about a Labor government is that they will eventually fall short of your expectations.
By the time he would have been doing another show next year, guaranteed, there would be plenty to work with.
Yeah, and we were growing some characters. And, you know, I think the shock was that we had 9 years of quite interesting characters from the LNP, which we had to put aside. So, but that wasn't the reason we stopped. The reason we stopped was I just felt that 10 years was enough.
It's a ridiculously long. I mean, that's the lifespan of five other shows.
Yeah, and when we started, I remember Mark Humphreys was doing The Roast.
Which Charles started.
That's right. And I always felt that I remember talking to Sophie Zachariah, who I think might have been producing it.
Yeah, she was there at EP. Yeah.
And I said these were two, you know, like in the way that Jon Stewart's show and Stephen Colbert's show used to follow each other. I thought, this would make a really interesting hour.
Yes. I agree.
I did suggest that. I thought. Well, I don't care who follows who, but on Fridays it'd be really nice. You were doing nightly.
We were doing
pieces 5 minutes each.
We were doing 15 minutes a night, and they allowed us during the election, I think, to go after you. I think it was. Or no, maybe it was before you, and it boosted your ratings as well. Like they gave us the main channel slot, like one night a week. It must have been Wednesdays.
So you should really be saying thank you for the right
and your instinct is exactly right, which is we sort of both benefited from being in the same space.
Because
it was the same sort of audience.
And we both, whether it was you or whether, I can't remember which one was on at 8, but we were following, it might have been Friday or Wednesday. But if it was Wednesday, we were immediately coming out of 7:30, which was a much better place for a show like that to
be. Yes, that's right.
Rather than maybe after... as good as Tom's hard quiz is, it might be better to actually follow, you know, the news and 7:30, and then suddenly you've got a nice comic spin on all the material. You don't have to spend time setting it up. Anyway, for that reason, and I said, we could also play with each other in that sort of gap between the, you know, when one show finishes and one show starts. Anyway, that didn't happen, unfortunately, because I think there was a lot of really good writing talent.
Well, the people who came out of that show were just, fantastic, including Mark.
He's still on, isn't he? He's still on TV.
I think you're speaking to him. In fact, next Wednesday. Now, I'm being told that you do have to go.
Okay, goodbye.
On ABC Radio without music.
See you later.
Coming up. So, thank you for coming. We can chat to you again if you like once we've read the book. If we might have some more informed questions.
I'm done.
It's been good. Review.
If you want to see Sean, he's in Perth tonight, Brisbane the 11th of October, Sydney with Mark Humphreys on the 12th. Canberra on the 13th, 5th of November, which is Saturday in Melbourne, Tuesday the 8th of November in Hobart, and the 9th in Launceston.
Did you do that from memory?
No, I've got it in front of me.
Oh, all right. Sorry.
You know, I'm interested, but
they're not that good, Sean.
No, not that good. It's the Tripping Over Myself tour. If you want to go and see him, you're being interviewed by lots of, frankly, better interviewers than we've shown ourselves to be during the course of this conversation. And the book is out now, Tripping Over Myself. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. What a pleasure it is.
It's lovely.
Yes, and... I'm sorry we can't keep going, but yeah, you've got to go and do other stuff.
I've got to go and talk to Richard. I don't know what I'm going to talk to him about. He would have read the book, though.
He would have read the book. He has. I've
just
seen it on his desk.
Pretend he's a fisherman.
I saw it on his desk. Our Gears from Road with part of the Acast Creator Network. Catch you next time.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.